This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. In this moment, so many of us are catching our breath between protests. With Detroit residents in the street over police shootings week after week, and protests in other places around the state as well, it's possible to lose sight how long of the issues of civil rights, justice, and systemic racism have been with us. There's an organization called New Detroit, Inc. that was launched in the wake of the 1967 Detroit uprisings to understand and seek solutions for the social and economic problems at the roots of the unrest. Now, in the wake of another monumental civil rights event, they've released what they call a declaration of war on racism. Michael Rafferty is the CEO of New Detroit. Michael, welcome to Stateside.
Great to be here. Thank you, April.
Well, let's start out with some context. As I said, the group was founded in the wake of the 67 uprisings. What was its purpose as stated at that time?
So after the 67 rebellion, captains of industry and policymakers got together and said, we have to do something. We have a clear value proposition to move more expeditiously toward civil rights. And the best way to do that from where they sat was to pull together other leaders from industry and from the community to deeply understand what was happening and commit themselves to social change. And, you know, since then, New Detroit's been this really interesting intermediary almost between community and industry leaders. And we've done a lot to focus on policies and policy change, you know, systems change through policy and systems change through dealing with institutions.
A lot of people have been apt to compare where the city was then and where it is now. Do you find that a useful comparison?
You know, I think it's always important to go back in history to understand where we are, understand what worked and what didn't. I think from that context, it is helpful. You know, I mean, I came into this this role in this organization a year ago, and I've had to do a lot of reflecting to understand how we can innovate and move forward. I think, you know, looking back, outside of that, I think the best personal way to look at that is to understand how much further we have to go.
In what sense?
Well, racism has been around for, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and we've made incremental change, you know, in fits and starts, you know, from abolition to civil rights. We get to the late 1960s and we see, you know, this major inflection point. We go from that inflection point to this one. And in many ways, it doesn't feel like we've gone that far. You know, a lot of the gaps that we had back then economically, we have today. A lot of the gaps that we've had in public health between Black and white Americans, we have today. You know, a lot of the things that we've been talking about these gaps for so long still exist. You know, that's what I mean. We still have a long way to go before we start closing these gaps. And hopefully we don't have that much further to go with all of the will that we seem to have right now. I think back in the late 1960s when we formed, it was because, you know, there was uniform interest in seeing civil change. We're seeing that again today, and I'm really hoping that sustains and we have a long runway with that.
Yeah. The Declaration of War on Racism was a document that New Detroit came up with, styled sort of as a formal proclamation. What are you hoping it will accomplish?
Well, I'm hoping it seizes the moment of people who really do want to see change happen but need direction. That's one. I also hope it, like any declaration of war, cements people in a vision and a concept of where we need to be going, how we need to be getting there, and, you know, committing themselves to the endurance that it's going to take to get to the desired state.
What is the action that you're hoping to see? Are there specific things that you would want people to know being at the top of your agenda?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to a state of anti-racism is a very long process. It's a journey. I believe that it's a journey, you know, personally and organizationally. When you look at something as pervasive as racism. It takes a long time to really understand, you know, where each element of whatever machine you're working with needs to be refined or thought through or replaced, right? And you know what I'm hoping is that, you know, people like, you know, just about a month ago, the CEOs of the 9 largest organizations in Detroit came together saying that they want to see an end to racism, along with the mayor and the head of the local NAACP, and they committed themselves to that broadly, you know, framed agenda. But there are steps that need to be taken in order to do that. And quite frankly, you know, it's, you've got a spectrum of commitment, right? I mean, you have a handshake and you have a marriage. And I believe in order for us to really intentionally dismantle racism and move ourselves toward an anti-racist state, we have to have a marriage. We have to have something as bold as that. We have to have something as bold as a declaration that individuals and institutions commit themselves to and sign on to. We have to institutionally look at anti-racism as, you know, important as our bottom lines. You know, I mean, what we've seen, you know, when you asked earlier, you know, is it fair to reflect back to the late 1960s and the rebellion that we had then? I think one of the things that, you know, many institutions found themselves doing then are, you know, much like what we see institutions doing now. And in some ways, it's because they didn't deeply commit and we lost traction over the course of 50 years. We're back to a point where we have traction now. And now we have, you know, it was important for me to put this declaration together to give, you know, more purpose and more direction to commitments like what the 9 CEOs signed on to and give them direction. Now, the next step is actually doing the work on themselves individually, doing the work on the organizations, doing things like organizational cultural audits to really understand where you are as a baseline and how you need to move forward. Committing yourself as an executive to professional development toward anti-racism the same way that you would in how to be a good leader, generally speaking.
You know, I was interested to see this discussion of cultural competency training across industries in the document. It's certainly an area in which almost every institution, public and private, in the city has work to do. And it gives one pause to think about the fact that this is still so needed in a city like Detroit, in a majority African-American city, in a city where you are more likely to either work or live or in other ways come in contact with people who you know, someone who has a different experience than in many other cities in the United States. What does that say about you know, if it still needs to happen in Detroit, that it still needs to happen at all?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, one, I'm gonna give some context before I get deep into the question, the answer. The one of the things I love about this country is we are probably one of the strongest, most multicultural countries in the world. You know, we have a tremendous amount of institutional power and financial power, and we are incredibly diverse. And one of the things that's really heartbreaking, being a person who grew up in this city and in this region, is looking around at just how diverse and multicultural it is, but how far behind we are from a lot of places, New York City, you know, Mexico City, how far behind we are in being able to look across the street or look down the street, or, you know, person sitting next to me on the bus who has, you know, very limited ethnic or cultural relationship to me. You know, we don't have that here. We're very homogenous. We've been segregated for so long, and it's heartbreaking, right? I mean, it's heartbreaking because, you know, these are people who I share land with. I share, you know, a metropolitan culture with, but we just don't understand and relate to each other in such ways that it creates conflict, and it has created conflict for so long. Now, I think, you know, the need for cultural competency and creating it, it should be part of our, you know, almost, it should be part of our lived experience from the time that we're children. But unfortunately, in places like Detroit, where segregation has just continued since redlining and before, it's unfortunate that we have to intervene and create these types of things, but it's still necessary.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Rafferty. He's the head of the nonprofit New Detroit, Inc., which was founded after the 1967 uprisings. You know, a lot of people have been asking the question, as more white Americans show up for protest events and speak out about racism, you know, I've seen the question posed on social media, why now, white people? Do you have any thoughts on what might have changed?
I think seeing George Floyd lose his life was deeply emotional for anybody who saw it. In the same week, you know, we see a video of Christian Cooper and Amy Cooper in Central Park. We hear Amy Cooper say to Christian, I'm going to call the police and let them know that a black man is harassing me. And you heard what led up to that. And you realize that that wasn't warranted, number one. And number two, that's obviously racist. And then following it, her statement is, I'm not racist, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was the reality that many of us were living in, you know, both George Floyd and his experience with the police and Christian's experience. Those were experiences that black people have lived with consistently. And I would say the white majority, or the majority of white people, I'm not going to say every white person for sure, but I mean, a lot of white people just did not see those types of things. And the moment they saw those two things put together, plus all of the data that is coming out about COVID and mortality and the disparities between black and white America there, I believe people are now motivated to understanding that racism really is a problem, that there's a moral imperative to doing something about it.
To that end, we've seen any number of corporations in recent weeks make pretty big statements, sometimes in broadcast ads or on social media or in print. Where do you see the rubber hitting the road when it comes to having some accountability and some follow through on the promises?
Yeah, I would say just like with racism and anti-racism, it's a continuum and it's a spectrum. I would say that some organizations, and I'm just being honest, you know, are saying those things because it's PR, right? But I would really hope that, you know, just like what we said earlier, where people are starting to understand that the moral compass is pointing in the direction of anti-racism, that people are actually putting their morals in line with how they're running their businesses. And I think we'll see the rubber hit the road when people are applying the same acumen that they have for running their businesses to all of the various steps that are needed to go down the journey of anti-racism. That includes, you know, coming up with key performance indicators for the organization. It includes deeply investing, not just hiring somebody who is a chief diversity officer or specialist, but deeply investing in that space. It means, I mentioned earlier, doing organizational cultural audits. I mean, the whole concept of auditing is, you know, part and parcel to running a business. Doing that, you know, around culture is really, really critical. When we don't see the momentum go down from individuals talking about the stuff, even at the corporate level, we'll start seeing real change happen. And quite frankly, the rubber hits the road when we see equity and when we see inclusion, when we see that not only are people getting hired who are, you know, are diverse as far as the standard of that organization goes, but they're actually being treated well. There's pay equity. Vendors are coming into the organization that reflect society. I mean, we need more black suppliers in a lot of these organizations that are large. When all those things start happening, we'll see that the organizations and the corporate culture are actually moving in the right direction.
Right. You know, I was thinking about something that I think a lot of us didn't expect to see in our lifetimes, a corporate sponsor leaning on Washington, D.C.'s NFL team to change its name from a slur that's very derogatory to Native Americans, and the team actually following through and doing it. I mean, clearly there are some tangible benefits when the corporate community gets involved on social justice issues. Is this the piece that's been missing? Or are there some limits to measuring our progress in terms of business community involvement?
I think the main limitations that we have toward measurement is that this space of anti-racism really has not been invested in as well as it should have been. And by that I mean, you know, when we look at really big problems to solve, like cancer or, you know, the desire to get to the moon, that's deeply invested in. So I would say where we have limitations is that, you know, we have a long way to go before we have all of the innovation at the you know, scale of supply that we have. At the scale of what should be the demand, I would go to the first part of the question with the answer. You know, I believe that what's really needed to achieve anti-racism at the state that we all deserve is, you know, for people who have power to use that power toward anti-racism, and we've seen that. To your point about the corporate sponsor creating this condition where, you know, a football team changes its name, it wouldn't have happened otherwise. It's been discussed for a long time. It's also been discussed that, you know, Colin Kaepernick and others should be able to kneel. And all of a sudden the NFL, you know, has, you know, finally come around to seeing that there was a problem with the way that they'd been dealing with that. It's also, you know, you see it with NASCAR and removing the Confederate flag. The moment they're in right now is people are starting to understand the moral imperative of the decisions that they're making. And fortunately, we have people with power coming in and supporting that.
Michael, we want to thank you so much for your time today. And we're looking forward to seeing the work that goes forward with the Declaration. Thanks for talking with us about it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Michael Rafferty is the CEO of New Detroit, Inc.